This is Girl on the River, the podcast. Whole crew, come forward to row. Hello, and a very warm welcome back to Girl on the River with episode 2 of the second season. And a particularly warm welcome if you're listening for the first time. This episode is one that was especially thrilling to make, as it was the first one that I actually recorded face-to-face out in the open, hence the background sound of the river rushing by and the birds singing. All of which is really appropriate because my guest, Angela Jones, spends almost as much time in the river as on dry land. Angela is a wild swimming specialist, a fitness instructor, a traveller, an adventurer, and now an author. She has swum without a wetsuit amongst icebergs in Iceland, kayaked, swum and run the length of the River Wye, and kayaked from coast to coast in Scotland before running all the way back. She's also won international triathlon events, though she tells me she's never been motivated by competition, and feels at her happiest in and around the river, and in particular, the beautiful River Wye. The River Wye flows through my veins and is my office and my playground, she says. Over the years, Angela has noticed a worrying deterioration in the health of the river, and she appeared in a Panorama documentary recently talking about the discharge of raw sewage into the river. And I'll put a link to that show in the show notes, which you'll find wherever you listen to this episode. Angela is a passionate campaigner for the environment and the natural world, and she tells me she's currently working on a programme with George Monbiot. So it was only right that I started my interview with a river swim with Angela. Although the sound wasn't good enough to use in this podcast, I have got some lovely video footage from it, which you can find on my YouTube channel, and the link to that is in the show notes. So I'm just going to do a little intro. We are sitting by the beautiful River Usk. You can probably hear the birds in the background and the sound of the water, and you may hear us also eating our picnic, because you can't have a swim without a picnic afterwards. So Ange, we've known each other for a few years, but the first thing I heard of you was long before we met, and I became aware that there was this woman who was this amazing athlete, amazing runner and triathlete, and the story went that you lived in the woods. So I thought you were like this crazy woman who like literally lived in the woods. So tell us who you are. You were quite a sort of successful triathlete, weren't you?
Yeah, I 20 years I raced internationally, and I only fell into it really. I remember going to a mountain race, and I've always used nature as my gym, and I've always had like a cheap £10 watch, and I've never gone out to do miles or speed. I've just really enjoyed it. So it just keeps you fit without even thinking about it. I remember going to a race, and it was a mountain race, and I fancied doing that section of mountains. And I thought, oh, if I go in this race, it'll just teach me, you know, it'll give me an idea of the area more. And I went in it, and I got to the end, and I remember a lady came up to me, and she said, "What are you doing in a couple of weeks, Ange?" And I said, "Why?" "Well, you've just qualified for Alaska to go out to the worlds to race for your country." And you're like, "Really?"
And you've just been doing it for fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I think that's the story of life. Well, my life, really. It's a life without any lanes. So there's no regimental way of it going. I don't take myself seriously. It's all about the enjoyment side. And when you relax and enjoy life, then you achieve things without you even knowing it. You know, life, we're blessed to have, you know, this beautiful countryside. But when you relax into anything, you achieve the best things, and you find peace. I find a lot of people are fighting against things in life, and they're trying their best to achieve this and that, And everything is on our doorstep, and it is, it's like my favourite poem, William H. Davis. It's what is this life if full of care? And we don't have that time to stand and stare. You know, we don't make that time. And we're always beating ourselves up about something. I never stress. And I never get lost because I never know where I'm going.
I love that. So now you work in the river, basically. So tell us a little bit about what you do now and how much time you spend in the river as well.
Well, people don't know where I live because I'm just constantly out and about. I spend all day, every day, outside, in the river, on the river, and then I sleep out at least once a week on the riverside. And I just have a bivvy bag, and there's a few stashes I've got along the way. So even if I'm out and I'm taking clients and I don't want to go home, I think, oh, I've got a little barrel there, and it's got a bivvy bag in, and it's got a little bit of food for Jack and a little bit of food for me and water.
Jack is your Jack Russell.
Jack is my little rescue dog, and I've had him now for 13 years, and he comes on all of my adventures with me, and he comes to work with me every day. And he swims the rivers, and he sleeps in my little bivvy bag, and he balances on the front of my kayak, and he's a good icebreaker as well, because a lot of people who come to me, they're not sure about the adventures in the countryside and that they've never done it before, and when they see Jack and see how soft he is, it breaks the ice for them, you know, and they can see that he's enjoying it. And he's really good. If I've got a group of people and I'm in the water swimming with them, Jack swims with us, and he'll always go close to the person that is the most nervous. So I normally would pick up on that, but if I need to have a little more of a hint, I'll just watch where Jack goes close to what person.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah. Dogs are like that.
He's very, very gentle, isn't he? He's a very sort of sweet-natured dog.
Yeah, and we're both, you know, I always say neither of us have got any leads and neither of us have got any owners. And that's a really nice feeling because, you know, I might swim and he'll get out on the side. I might not see him for half an hour or an hour, but I know he'd be running along the side or walking along the side. He pops his head out further along. And then there's certain sections. If I'm swimming a long section with a client, there's a little church, for instance. There's a little church down at Simmons Yat West. And when I've gone further than he wants to or he wants to, he just goes into the churchyard and he'll just sit there for an hour or two until I come back for him. And that's quite nice. We know each other without actually having to say anything to each other. I think freedom of the body and the mind is really important. And you know, we don't own dogs. We shouldn't feel like that, and we shouldn't own people. And I think if you let somebody have that freedom, you get the best out of them as well.
And we shouldn't own the river.
Yeah, there you go. That's a huge one. So it's a natural resource, you know, it's an invitation into nature. And we've, you know, I feel blessed every day that this is my office, my playground. But also we hugely need to respect that invitation. And over the years, I've been monitoring, I've been witnessing, and I've been logging a lot of it, where the decline in the health of the river has changed drastically.
So tell me more about that. What have you been observing and noting?
One of my passions is I love being below the surface of the water. So I spend a lot of time underneath the water, and I've been monitoring the salmon, the eels, anything else that I see below there. And I also use some monofins, so which allow me to go along the bottom of the river and into the deep salmon pools. And I do, I write down, I log, I see, you know, whatever I see. and I made note of it. And even like the beautiful water crowfoot, it used to dance in the river. And a water crowfoot is an aquatic plant that blankets much of the Wye and the Usk. And it's a protected plant, you know, so it's illegal to take it out of the river. But it gives it the highest status in the river because it filters the water. But also we have the larvae underneath the water crowfoot. We've got the larvae laid below there. We've got the fish that hide beneath there. We've got the eels. We have the swans that is their delicacy, and the Canada geese, their food.
So they feed on the water crowfoot itself,
do they? Yeah. And I would often like swim underneath and just hold on to a stone and just feel the water crowfoot going across me. And it's just, it embraces you. But the amount of wildlife and aquatic life that you'd see below it. And I've been writing a book for 2.5 years. And when I first started writing that book, I put in there, be careful when you swim these sections because you could get entangled in the water crowfoot. Well, this is 2 years on and we've lost nearly 95% of that beautiful plant.
In 2 years?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is causing a 95% decline in a plant that's so important?
Well, it's been on the news a lot. And it wouldn't be from just one source of pollution. It's the water, the rivers are getting hit from all directions. So we've got a huge amount of poultry farming that is increased. I think it's about 10 million birds. They're going up everywhere because the land is cheap along the river to buy. And then we get the wash off going into the water, which is causing the phosphates in the water.
This is primarily from chicken farms.
Chicken farms, yeah. Chicken farms. We've also got slurry, which are coming from cows on the side, where people aren't getting rid of the cow manure properly. That's just going straight into the water, which is having a devastating effect. We have many, many houses that their sewerage outlet is straight into the river. Businesses along the river, I watch that the pipes from these businesses go straight into the river and filled it. Then we've got the big water companies. You know, as you may have heard, I've just done a programme in Panorama, that the water companies have been releasing raw sewerage in many sections. And I've got information of data of all of this going on because I've been saying about it for years and nobody would take no notice. So I've got evidence now, factual evidence. I mean, this goes on. It's literally raw sewerage going into our rivers from the big water companies. You've got Welsh Water, not for profit. I wonder why. They literally are just pumping it in. And one section I've been monitoring for some time now, every 20 minutes, a release of sewerage is going in there. So instead of it going to this sewerage plant and being treated and then allowed into our water courses, what's happening is they're just pumping it direct. So you haven't got the finance, they haven't got that extra money of treating it. And they don't expect people to report it. So, you know, and then backlash.
Since you made the programme, has it stopped? Have they...
No. So since I've made that programme, I've had so much backlash over the last couple of months about what I've been trying to bring attention to. But since that programme went out, that went out last Monday, that's the 12th of April, and then on the 18th of April, and I was told by different agencies that heads were going to roll, and, you know, this was definitely not in their licence to be able to do this, because they were saying it was in flood only, and the data I've got clearly shows, you know, there's times there where for 20 days they're just releasing raw sewerage into there. And there's no floods going on, the levels are low. It's been absolutely appalling.
So has this changed where you will swim?
Yeah, of course. So the book that I just finished, I take away probably 26 miles of the Wye. where I know it's highly polluted. And I get asked all the time, where is it safe to swim? Where is it not? And I know the sections that it's safe and I know what's coming out. But it is quite... I always think of everybody who likes swimming outdoors. It's all of this inclusive to everybody. Swimming without a roof, that's how I explain it. But the amount of people who have contacted me and who have said, is it safe to swim here? Is it safe there? And do you know what? Not once have they said, what can we do about it, Ange? There's a few who've mentioned that. So really, to me, that's not a wild swimmer. That's somebody who's using the water for their own benefit. And that's selfishness again.
Yeah. So let's have a look at that. Because my own view is that if we're going to sort of turn this ship around, which we really need to really urgently, it's both how we live ourselves and changing our own behaviour and then changing government or authorities' behaviour. So what are the most obvious things that we can do? Anyone listening who is thinking, right, I want to do something, what's the first step they should take?
Right, well, there is a petition out there that I've been sharing. And if we can put our signature to that petition that is going to go to Parliament, I wanted 10,000 signatures on it, so I shared it. Many people have shared it. We've gone up to about 20,000 now. And if we can get up to 100,000 signatures, then they have to discuss it in Parliament and bring it to the attention. So anyone out there who really feels passionate about saving this beautiful natural resource, I would say to you, if you witness anything, if you see pollution, you know, don't just walk past and go, oh, that's awful. Video it. You know, pass it on to Natural Resource Wales, pass it on to the environment agencies. They have to log it. Pass it on to your MP. They have to log it. They have to give you a log number. You know, and if you don't feel like you want to do it, because I know a lot of people don't want to rock the boat, pass it to me. I'll log it for you. You know, but it's okay to have blinkers on and just go, oh, that's awful, isn't it? But we all have to do our bit. I'm only one voice, and the more voices that I get with me and addressing this, the louder we are together.
So what I'll do is, in the show notes, I'll put the petition and I'll also put contact details for Natural Resource Wales and the Environment Agency, all the places where
people need to go, rather than having to look it up and go, which is this the right place exactly? And that's what I have. When people contact me, I have a list and I'll just ping it over to them and I say, right, just email any of these. Mm-hmm. You know, and that they have to do something about it.
So in terms of what we can do in changing our own behaviour and how we live, obviously not dropping litter is mm-hmm. a great start. Mm-hmm. What else can we be doing? I mean, I know I'm careful not to buy cheap chicken, because that is supporting all of those chicken farms that are putting all the pollution into my river, or the mm-hmm. river where I swim and row. Mm-hmm. What else can we do?
Everything from the basic. So literally, as you said, picking up your litter. When you're going into the water, make sure you're not full of chemicals. Mm-hmm. You know, people are... I even had one... supposed... Everyone calls themselves a wild swimmer now. Somebody contacted me to say, oh, whereabouts would be a good place to wash in the water? And it was like, really, did you say that? So limit the chemicals. Take notice of the chemicals that you're using on your swimming costume, on your hair, all those, because we are taking them straight into the river. If we're going to use our wetsuit in other water sources, so we have three major plagues at the moment and we are cross-contaminating. So, for instance, we've got the killer shrimp. Now, say in Cardiff Bay, they've set up this open water swim group. And there's hundreds of people going down there. And if you swam in there and then you came up to a river and you had that same wetsuit on, all those same socks or those gloves that you wore down there, and you hadn't thoroughly washed and dried that, that killer shrimp can last for 14 days. So then you would bring it to a river, and that has devastating impact on the ecological system of the river, you know. So that's one thing. People don't understand about cross-contamination, and we really have to address that. And then another thing that's happening to the rivers as well, with samples that they've been taking, they've been finding high amounts of antidepressants and contraceptive pill in the water, because people are flushing down the toilets their tablets, you know, and that's going straight into the water. So it's little things like that, and then we've got the major problems. You know, if you live by a river and you know that your cesspit is full, get it checked. You know, it's just simple things like that. Then we've got the big water companies, we've got farming. We just got to pay more attention to these things, and don't worry if you're going to rock the boat. You know, it's protecting this beautiful, beautiful nature that we are so blessed to be invited to. But we are on that brink now, and I can honestly say that it's not shocking. I'm not trying to make people stand up and go, yes, we are on that edge where we are so close. 35 years I've been swimming the rivers. I live and I breathe them. But we are on the edge now of where we are not going to be able to return the damage that we've caused. You know, it really does need to be stamped out urgently.
So there's obviously been an explosion of wild swimming in this last year. It's probably the fastest growing sport during the pandemic. What are the basic rules for doing it kind of respectfully so that we can preserve the environment and not actually cause any more harm?
In the last year, we've got a 325% in open water swimming. We had a drowning 2 weeks ago. We had seven last year, locally. And these are all people going into the water thinking it's a swimming pool. First of all, when we get to the water place that we're going to go into, river, wherever it is, you need to know that part of the river. You need to know how to make sure that when you walk down into the river that you're not disturbing. It might be where the salmon are spawning. It might be, you know, be gentle when you go into the river, and also when you come out. Because we could be disturbing so many different species. That's one thing.
So it's not like going to the swimming baths when we were kids, where we need like one of those posters, you know, no petting, no bombing.
No, exactly. And people always, you know, I put a double page in the book about swans, because people go to me, oh, swans will break your arms. And it's like, swans are the most gorgeous, absolutely. They're the heaviest flying bird that we've got in the UK. They're protected by the crown. If you're going to scream and shout and jump in around them, yeah, of course they're going to get aggressive. Just be peaceful about wildlife. If there are Canada geese, you know, nesting on the side, just give them a big berth. It's literally, you know, I often, there's a section, you know, I love my wildlife. There's a section where there's adders, and I absolutely adore, make an effort to go. I know when the adders are around, and I know, you know, when they're out, and they're more likely to be swimming, you know, in the heat of the day. And I've got some lovely memories of swimming, and you've got an adder just sliding past you, making that lovely zigzag. And everybody's like, oh, I will never tell people what I get up to, because you scare them, because they're like, but we are actually going into nature. You know, this is their world, and nothing will ever, ever harm you. There's nothing in the water that will go for you. You know, I've even swum close to pikes. And nothing will ever harm you. It just asks for respect.
You do go off on adventures quite a lot, don't you?
Oh, I do.
Mean, you've had some amazing adventures.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for some, yeah.
What's your next one going to be? We have to talk about them, I think. But what's your next one going to be?
I don't actually, as I said in the beginning of the interview, and it is my favourite saying, I never get lost because I never know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And you'll wait and see. Yeah.
It'll come.
And even when I did like the Y 5 weeks, and even when I crossed from one side of Scotland to the other, kayaking, and then I ran 96 miles.
That was like round the top.
No. I got in at Loch Hearn, which is a tidal lock. I parked the van there, so the sea's there, got in there, and I kayaked all the way through there. Then I got into the Caledonian Canal and went all through the locks. And then I got out at the other end, and I went around to Nin, and then I put my kayak on my back, and I had wheels, so I pulled it most of the time. And then when I went over the mountains, 96 miles back, I had to carry it a lot of the way. But, my Jack Russell came with me, and we hit some really bad storms crossing Scotland in the kayak. And we flipped a few times, and it was just, and we slept out for 5 weeks in bivy bag, and it was just, it was so magic, it was so hard, and you have two voices in your head, and the one's like, yes, bring it on, this is adventure, and it's a lovely challenge, but it's not a goal that I need to do because I want to make myself feel better about myself and my life. It's just out there. And literally, when I hung up my swimming costume from work on the Friday night, I didn't know where I was going on the Saturday, and I just thought, oh, I fancy going to Scotland. Oh, I fancy, you know, linking the North Sea to the Atlantic. Oh, I might do that. You know, so there was no planning to it whatsoever. Yeah. And that's nice, because then you don't overanalyze it. You just get on with it. So... And then when I went out to Iceland and I swam in between the tectonic plates, I mean, I didn't think about that. I had my monofins with me, and I knew I wanted to play in Iceland. And
so
then
you were swimming with icebergs, basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And when I got down to the tectonic plates, you know, there's a business there that they put you in 10mm wetsuits, well, dry suits, and they take you into the tectonic plates. And I just went off to the side, and I was just trying to lower, so I've worked over the years on my breathing, because I love to spend a lot of time underwater. So I was relaxing my breathing, and I got it down to about 30, just total relaxing. And then I know I can slip into really cold water in a costume, because I haven't got that extra meat on me for that insulation, so I have to rely on my mindset. And I've got these big monofins on that weigh 3-4 pounds in weight. And then you just dropping into the water. And just before I got into the water, these divers just come across. And the one bloke goes, oh, you're fucking mental. You are. You're going to die. And I literally came out of my relaxation. So I had to move away from them and go off and start the whole process again of relaxation, detachment. And then I slipped in, and it was just magical. And you know, how fascinating is that? That you can work with your mindset. And it's so true. So many people might wake up in the morning and go, oh, I don't feel good today. You know, and that's why I always use an oxygenometer. So if you put that oxygenometer on, it will pick up what your oxygen saturates say in your pulse. They're really like 25 pounds is what they use in the hospital. It's the best piece of kit that you can possibly have. And you can look at that and think, right, well, my oxygen saturates are the same. It's the mindset that I'm in, you know. So it's really important. And if you can detach from cold water, you can transfer that into anything in your life. Detach and relax. And you do, you just put it into all these other sections of your life, and it makes it, it just makes it complete. I would say 10 years ago, I found complete peace in myself, because before that, obviously I've had children, I've had a farm, I've been an athlete, but I never knew really what I wanted. And then it just, when I relaxed into nature, and I thought, wow, This is it. It just made me a complete circle then. I didn't need to search. I didn't need to have anyone by my side. It was literally, this is who Angela is. You know, and when you find that peace, you realise it doesn't come from money, it doesn't come from, you know, material goods. It is a wonderful feeling. You know, the third chapter in your life, I feel, is the best chapter of all.
Yeah, I wish I'd known that when I was 16 and I thought anyone over 30 was ancient.
Well, I used to work many years ago with, I used to take, it's just for a short time, the over 55s out on outdoor adventures. I was young and I used to think, God, you know, it was wonderful that these elderly people are doing this. And it's like, well, I'm there now and I feel the youngest that I've ever felt in my life.
That I can relate to. Sure.
And when you stop worrying about, so many people worry about what other people think of them and how they perceive them in life and they judge them on what they've achieved. When you get rid of all that, you know, you actually just think, oh, this is really quite cool. And every time your eyes open in the morning, it's like, this is just, oh, thank you. You know, I can't appreciate, every single day I just feel so appreciative of.
Look at this, I mean, just... Yes, the light on the water.
Yeah, the reflections and the birds. Yeah.
And actually, that's the thing, isn't it, with swimming? It really is all five senses.
It does. It makes you more acute. That's why I enjoy the night swimming and I enjoy being below the surface because you can really just enjoy. And the sweetness, I taste the sweetness and I taste the pollutants in the river. You know, it makes you much more aware of your surroundings. And that's like life. You know, I've always been an optimist. And there's always going to be things that are unpleasant and there's going to be situations in your life that you don't like. And it's the same. You can transfer that over into the river with the pollution that's going on and how it's absolutely diabolical now how bad it's become, but you can look at the good as well. So we know that's a beautiful river, we know that nature, absolutely, you know, the wildlife is just amazing. On the bad side is we know that we've got companies and people polluting it and we have to address that. So don't just, if you go out there and you're an eco warrior, people will automatically put up barriers against you and they won't listen. So whenever I'm talking to people, or I might do a TV program or something, I show them the beauty and how gorgeous it is. Or if I'm doing an event, I'll always talk about the environment. So you're crossing over, you're not just blasting one thing, because people will shut off to the information that you're trying to give. So if you do little snippets and then they'll go away and they'll have a little think and think, oh, I can do something about that.
Yeah, because it's the contrast, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
That's one of the reasons I wanted us to swim together, so I had some footage of what it is that we're trying to protect here. You know, it's not just on principle because it's a good thing to do. It's because, look, this is the most spectacularly beautiful and peaceful place. And it's not going to be like this next generation if we don't do something now.
Yeah.
So it's showing people, isn't it? This is what's
and good. And a lot of people that have come into wild swimming in the last year or a couple of years, it's fashionable to say that you're a wild swimmer, but really, you know, you're enjoying it. Yeah, that's nice. But really, you're thinking of your health, but please incorporate the health of the river that's actually allowing your health to benefit.
Now tell me about your book, because I have only glimpsed it so far. So get that book out.
Well, Patricia, I'll tell you a little bit about this book, because you've been on my journey for the last few years.
I have, and it's called Wild Swimming, The River Why by Angela Jones.
So it says what it is on the book, and it does.
It's beautiful. It's an absolutely beautiful produced book.
So this picture on the front was taken 6 o'clock on September the 1st, and I'd slept out in the woods, and I was being met by the BBC to swim this section.
If you send me that picture, I'll put it up on my website so people can see it. It's absolutely gorgeous.
And I'm I've actually got 1,000 copies coming to my little house this Friday, and they said, do you realise how many books, 1,000 books is going to be? And I said, yeah, that's not a problem, I'll find space. But it's taken over 2.5 years to write, and I get asked so many times. So 35 years of experience in the why, you know, and the diversities of it. I wanted to try and put it into a book. When I first started out, I just wanted a map section so people could swim it. And then I realised that just mapping sections wasn't good enough. I wanted to show them the wildlife that they'd see along the way. I wanted to show about the water safety and reading the why. So we've got undercurrents, we've got eddies, we've got boulders, we've got the fastest rising river at 30 centimetres an hour. We've got sections where it's really, really busy, and then we've got sections where you've got 200-foot red sandstone cliffs to the side. So it's very diverse. But the other thing, you know, I'm really passionate, as you've probably heard, that I'm, you know, about protecting that environment. So I go into protecting the environment. Swimmer's Code of Conduct. How many people know the Swimmer's Code of Conduct, you know, in a river? And there's not much out there for other waters. So I cover the whole ethics of the code of conduct. I also go through the kit that you might need to wear in winter and summer. I show the private land. I show all the entrances and the exits along the Wye. There's a huge section that I miss out because I know where we've got heavy pollution. So I would never put anything in my book that I knew that there was heavy polluted sections. There's a family section, because I'm, you know, I adore children, absolutely adore children, and I want families to be able to go and picnic and have a little dip and take their children in and think, right, that's a nice shallow section. And remember, this is forever changing, because with the weather conditions, you know, each of these sections will change. And there's a little bit about me as well, because I'm quite a feral person, and people come to me and they might go, oh, you're that athlete, or oh, you're that feral swimmer. And it just shows you,
you're that crazy woman who sleeps in the woods.
Yeah, and with that massive hair, and you know, so it just covers all of that. And also my journey for the last 35 years along the river, and how I first stumbled across it when I didn't even know what it was called. so that's what's in that one.
So where can we buy it?
Well, literally, I'm selling it myself, mm-hmm. but I'm going to get it into the local bookshops. So that's my mission this week, is to get on top of a few of those things. I've sold over 300 copies without advertising it so far. I've had a lot of interest from different places. I'm going to put it online, so it'll go on my website with a link to it, and it'll go on Amazon as well.
Well, I will link to your website, to where people can find it, in the show notes, so people can get their own copy.
And then we have, obviously, the wonderful SARA, which is the search and rescue that helps out in emergencies along the Wye.
Oh, yeah.
So a percentage of the book will go to them.
Oh, wonderful. Well, they are Monmouth Rowing Club's nominated charity this year. Oh. So we've been raising money for them recently. They are
brilliant.
Amazing.
Aren't they?
I've actually rowed 1K wearing full SARA search and rescue kit.
Oh gosh, that must have been hot.
It was interesting. Especially as I didn't realise till I'd started the piece that I was sitting on the buckle that goes between your legs.
Oh,
took a few weeks to recover from that.
And you are actually in this book because you're a Monmouth rower, and I couldn't. I think that's you, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It is. Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful book. Everybody buy it, and I'll put the link. And you need to buy it if you've ever been to the River Wye, if you ever want to go to the River Wye, if you're a wild swimmer, if you want to be a wild swimmer, if you're interested in the environment. It's just, it's beautiful. Oh, the photographs are stunning. Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous. Buy it. I'm getting mine today, I think.
Since Since talking to Angela, I've created a resources page on my website where you can find links and suggestions for what you can do to help to preserve our rivers. You'll find it at girlontheriver.com/resources, and the link will be in the show notes together with the petition that Angela mentioned and details of where to buy her book. In the last few weeks, I'm happy to say that a bit of momentum has started building up around the problems with the River Wye. My own rowing club has signed up to a citizen science project whereby we'll be testing the water for things like phosphates, nitrates, electrical conductivity, pH and temperature. And I've put details of similar schemes on my resources page in case you want to get your club involved in testing water quality. We've also been in touch with other groups of river users about sharing resources and gathering data in the hope that action will be taken at the highest levels. We may be reaching a tipping point, but there's still a lot we can do to make a difference. So please do have a think about what you personally can do to help preserve our rivers. And I'd suggest you start by having a look at my resources page, girlontheriver.com/resources, if you need ideas. My next guest is the wonderful Baz Moffat, former GB rower and World Championships medalist, who is now a women's health and fitness coach and co-founder of The Well. Don't imagine for a moment that this episode will only be relevant to female listeners, though. She has loads to say that will be of interest and relevance to everyone, so do listen out for that. One final thing, I just wanted to remind you of my Patreon scheme where you can access extra content, free stuff and other perks for the cost of a monthly cup of coffee. And you'll also help keep the podcast afloat. I haven't yet got to the point of the podcast breaking even on the monthly outgoings, so all support is really welcome so I can keep bringing you more episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/girlontheriver. So I'll see you again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, do get in touch if you want to chat or have any suggestions for future guests. I'm at Girl on the River on all channels, or you can email me at girlontheriverpodcast@gmail.com. And next stroke, easy oar.